Living Fiction. Northwestern University, in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company, brings you a radio dramatization of a timeless story, The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne, another in a series of Living Fiction. The founders of a new colony have invariably found it necessary to allot one portion of the virgin soil as a cemetery and another as a prison site. The grass plot before the jail on a certain summer morning of the late 17th century was occupied by a large number of Puritan inhabitants of Boston, all with their eyes intently fastened on the iron-clamped oaken door. But let us bend an ear to a few of the gossips in the multitude. They can no doubt tell the story better than I.
Good wives, I'll tell ye a piece of my mind. It would be greatly for the public good if we women should have the handling of such a transgressor as this Hester Prynne. Well, what think ye, gossips? If the hussy stood up for judgment before us, would she come off with such a sentence as the worshipful magistrates have awarded?
No, no!
Mary, I trow not. The magistrates are God-fearing gentlemen, but merciful overmuch. At the very least, they should have put a brand of hot iron on Hester Prynne's forehead.
Mm. The woman has brought shame on us all and ought to die.
Mercy on us, good housewife. Is there no virtue save what springs from a wholesome fear of the gallows? This is the hardest word yet.
If I had my way, the woman would be...
Peace! Hush now, gossips. The lock is turning in the prison door.
See how she repels the town beetle's hold on her. And what's of her own accord?
She carries her babe in her arms.
And the infant does not hide the red letter on her breast.
How elaborately she's embroidered it with swirls of gold thread.
She hath good skill at her needle, that's certain. What did ever a woman before this brazen hussy contrive such a way of showing it?
Peace, neighbors, do not let her hear you. Not a stitch in that embroidered letter, but she has felt in her heart.
Make way, good people, make way in the king's name. Open a passage, and I promise ye, Mr. Prynne shall be set on scaffold where man, woman, and child may have a sight of her brave apparel from this time till an hour past meridian. A blessing on the righteous colony of the Massachusetts, where iniquity is dragged out into the sunshine. Come along, Madam Hester, and show your scarlet letter in the marketplace.
Now, let us get nearer to the scaffold where she will stand.
Why, look you, who is that man on the outskirts of the crowd?
By my troth, I've never seen him before. He seems on in years, slightly deformed in one shoulder.
He's addressing himself to one of the townsmen. I should like to know what he has to say.
I pray you, good sir, who is this woman? And wherefore is she here set up to public shame?
You must be a stranger in this region, friend, else you would have heard of Mistress Hester Prynne.
Aye, you say truly I am a stranger. Will you please to tell me, therefore, of this woman's offenses?
She was the wife of a certain learned man, English by birth, who was minded to cross over and cast his lot with us of the Massachusetts. To this purpose he sent his wife before him, remaining himself to look after some necessary matters. Marry, good sir, in some 2 years or less, no tidings have come of this gentleman, Master Prynne, and his young wife being left to her own misguidance. Well, look you, the babe in her arms.
Aye, and who may be the father of yonder babe?
Of a truth, friend, that matter remaineth a riddle. Madam Hester absolutely refuseth to speak.
Her husband should come himself to look into the mystery.
Our magistrates have not put in force the extremity of the law against her, which is death. But in their great mercy, have doomed Mistress Prynne to stand only a space of 3 hours on the platform of the pillory, and then, for the remainder of her natural life, to wear a mark of shame, the scarlet A, upon her bosom.
A wise sentence. She will be a living sermon against sin. But it irks me that the partner of her iniquity should not stand on the scaffold by her side. But he will be known. He will be known.
The Reverend Wilson is risen on the scaffold. See, he's going to speak.
Hearken to me, Hester Prynne. I have striven with my younger brother in the service of God, under whose preaching you have been privileged to sit, that he should try to persuade you to divulge the name of him who tempted you to this grievous fall.
good Reverend Dimmesdale, the responsibility of this woman's soul lies greatly with you. Will you not change your mind and exhort her to repentance and confession?
Hester Prynne, thou hearest what Reverend Wilson says, and seest the accountability under which I labor. If thou feelest it is for thy soul's peace, I charge thee to speak out the name of thy fellow sinner and sufferer. Be not silent for any mistaken pity and tenderness for him. Take heed how thou deniest to him who perchance has not the courage to seize it for himself, the bitter but wholesome cup that is now presented to thy lips.
Woman, speak out the name. That and thy repentance may avail to take the scarlet letter off thy breast.
Never. It is too deeply branded. You cannot take it off.
Speak, woman! Speak and give your child a father!
I will not speak. My child must seek a heavenly father. She shall never know an earthly one.
It is said that after she returned to prison, Hester Prynne's calm manner gave way to one that was overwrought.
A sort of physician was called in.
Aye, the stranger we saw in the marketplace this morning. The one with the deformed shoulder.
He seems to be a learned man with herbs and leeches.
I saw thee in the marketplace today.
I know thou didst. Drink this potion.
I have thought of death. Have wished for it. Yet if death be in this cup, I bid thee think again ere I drink it.
Dost thou know me so little, Hester Prynne? If I imagined a scheme of vengeance, what could I do better than let thee live? Drink. Hester, I ask not how thou hast fallen in the pit. It was my folly and thy weakness. What had I, a man already in decay, what had I to do with beauty and youth like thine? From the moment when we came down the old church steps together, a married pair, I might have beheld that scarlet letter blazing at the end of our path.
Thou knowest I was frank with thee. I felt no love, nor feigned any.
I thought I could warm thee by the warmth thy presence gave me.
I have greatly wronged thee.
We have wronged each other. Between us the scale hangs fairly balanced. But, Hester, the man lives who has wronged us both. Who is he?
Ask me not. That thou shalt never know.
Thou mayest cover up thy secret from the prying multitude. But as for me, I shall seek this man as I have sought truth in books and gold and alchemy. Sooner or later he will be mine.
Thy words interpret thee as a terror.
One thing I would enjoin upon thee. Huss, thou hast kept the secret of thy paramour. Keep likewise mine. Breathe not to any human soul that thou didst ever call me husband. Should thou fail me in this, beware.
I will keep the secret.
And now, Mistress Prynne, Roger Chillingworth, as I shall henceforth be known in Boston, leaves you alone.
Why dost thou smile so at me? Hast thou enticed me into a bond that will prove the ruin of my soul?
Not thy soul, Hester. No, not thine.
Goes Hester Prynne across the street with a child, Pearl.
I should think she'd be too ashamed to bring her into town with her.
It cannot be helped, living as she does in that lonely cottage out from the town. There's no one to leave the child with.
See how her letter gleams in the sun, as if it were on fire.
Yeah, fire with sin? How old is the child now?
3 years. One might call her beautiful, if she were not the product of Satan.
Just see how the woman keeps her dressed. Like a bird of royal plumage.
She's going toward Governor Billingham's mansion.
I understand. He ordered a pair of embroidered gloves from her for an important occasion of state.
Yes?
Is the worshipful Governor Billingham within?
He hath the Reverend Dimmesdale with him, and also the physician, Mr. Chillingworth.
I will enter and wait.
Very well.
Look, look, Mother, in the big shiny kettle, I see thee, and thy letter shines so bright.
Hush, child, I hear voices coming.
Ah, well, what have we here?
Good morrow, thy worship.
It is well thou hast come, Esther Prynne. The council has been discussing whether we should trust an immortal soul such as yon child to the guidance of one who has stumbled and fallen. Were it not better for thy little one that she be taken out of thy charge and clad soberly and disciplined strictly and instructed in the truths of heaven and earth?
God gave her into my keeping. I will not give her up. Reverend Dimmesdale, thou wast my pastor and hadst charge of my soul and knowest me better than these men. Speak for me. I will not lose the child.
There is truth in what she says. God gave her the child in an instinctive knowledge of its nature and requirements which no other mortal can possess. This child of its father's guilt and mother's shame has come from the hand of God. It was meant for a blessing, the one of her life. It was meant also for a retribution, too, a pang, a sting, an ever-recurring agony in the midst of a troubled joy. For Hester Prynne's sake, and no less for the child, let us leave them as Providence has seen fit to bless them.
Well said, good reverend. What say you, Mr. Chillingworth? Hath he not pleaded well for the poor woman?
Aye, well, and with a strange earnestness.
Have you heard the blessed news?
Neither Reverend Dimmesdale, who's so long been in poor health, we feared for his life. But he's finally consented to take the advice of this physician, Mr. Chillingworth.
And not a moment too soon.
And now Mr. Chillingworth is lodged in the same house with the minister, so as to give him his closest attention at all hours.
It was Mr. Chillingworth's own idea.
An inspired one. The two will be good company for each other. They say the minister often reads in Mr. Chillingworth's room while he prepares.
Oh, where, my kind doctor, did you gather those herbs, such a dark and flabby leaf?
Even in the graveyard just below the window there. I found them on a grave which bore no tombstone. They're new to me. It may be they grew out of the dead man's heart and typify some hideous secret that was buried with him and with which he had done better to confess during his lifetime.
The chance he earnestly desired to, but could not.
And wherefore not? Since all the powers of nature call so earnestly for the confession of sin that these black weeds have sprung up out of a buried heart to make manifest an unspoken crime...
That, good sir, is but a fantasy of yours. A knowledge of men's hearts is needful to the complete solution of the problem. And I can see that the hearts holding such miserable secrets that you speak of will yield them up at that last day, not with reluctance, but with a joy unutterable.
Then why not reveal them here? Why should not the guilty ones sooner avail themselves of this unutterable solace?
They mostly do. Many a poor soul hath given its confidence to me. And what a relief I've witnessed in them afterwards. How can it be otherwise?
Yet, some men bury their secrets.
True, there are such men. But it may be they keep silent because they retain a zeal for God's glory and man's welfare so that they shrink from displaying themselves black. Because henceforth no good can be achieved by them. No evil of the past redeemed by better service.
These men deceive themselves. They fear to take up the shame which rightfully belongs to them.
I wanted to ask your judgment frankly, sir, concerning the condition of my health.
Very well. I shall give it freely and honestly. This order is a strange one. The disease is what I seem to know, yet know it not. Hath all the operation of this disease been fairly laid open to me?
How else can it be?
You would tell me, then, that I know all? Be it so. But again, he to whom only the outward and physical evil is laid open, oft-time knows but half the evil which he is called upon to cure. A bodily disease may, after all, be but a symptom of some ailment in the spiritual part. Would you, therefore, that your physician heal the bodily evil? How may this be unless you first slay open to him the wound in your soul?
No! No! Not to thee! Not to an earthly physician! If it be the soul's disease, then I do commit myself to the one physician of the soul. He can cure or kill me. But who art thou that meddlest in this matter?
that dares thrust himself between a sufferer and his God.
As with one passion, so with another. He hath done a wild thing ere now, this pious Master Dimmesdale, in the hot passion of his heart.
Hast thou been aware that Hester Prynne is not looked upon by the townspeople in the same light as 7 years ago when she first covered herself with ignominy?
And for good reason. Her charity is boundless. In all seasons of calamity, she has taken a needed place.
Why, even tonight, she's sitting by the deathbed of Governor Winthrop. Perhaps she'll stay till long past midnight, if she can be of use.
Come along now, Pearl. It's very late and we must be getting home.
Hester. Hester Prynne, is that you? Oh,
yes, it is Hester Prynne. I and my little Pearl.
Whence came you, Hester? What sent you?
I've been watching at the deathbed of Governor Winthrop.
Come up here, on the scaffold, Hester, and little Pearl. You have both been here before, but I was not with you. Come up hither once again, and we shall all three stand together. Give me thy hand, Pearl.
Minister?
Yes, child?
Wilt thou stand here with mother and me tomorrow noontide?
Nay, not so, my little Pearl. I shall indeed stand with thy mother and thee one other day, but not tomorrow.
What other day?
At the great judgment day. But the daylight of this world will not see our meeting.
Worthy sir.
Hester Chillingworth!
Pious Master Dimmesdale, can this be you? Well, well, indeed. We men of study whose heads are in our books have need to be straightly looked after. We dream in our waking moments and walk in our sleep. Come, good sir, and my dear friend, I pray you let me lead you home.
How did you know I was here?
Verily, I knew nothing of the matter. I had been at the bedside of the governor, doing what my poor skill might to ease him. Come with me, I beseech you, reverend sir. Else she will be poorly fit to do the Sabbath duty tomorrow.
This is a new part of the forest we walk in today, Mother.
Yes, child.
Mother, who is that old man yonder pulling up weeds? I have seen him before.
It doesn't concern you, Pearl. Run down to the margin of the water and play with the shells until I call you.
Yes, Mother. I'll make a crown for myself out of the seaweed.
Roger Chillingworth?
Huh?
I would speak a word with you that concerns us much.
Ah, and is it Mistress Hester that has a good word for old Roger Chillingworth? I hear good tidings of you on all hands, Mistress. What see you in my face that you look at it so earnestly?
Something that would make me weep if there were any tears bitter enough. But let it pass. It is of a miserable man that I would speak.
And what of the Reverend Dimmesdale?
7 years ago in prison you extorted a promise of secrecy from me concerning your real identity. If the life and fame of yonder man were in your hands, there seemed no choice to me. Since that day, no man is so near to him as you. You tread behind his every footstep. You cause him to die a living death daily, and still he knows you not. In permitting this, I have acted a false part to the only man to whom it was left to me to be true.
What evil have I done this man? That he now breathes and creeps about the earth is owing all to me.
Better he had died at once.
Yea, woman, you say truly. Better he had died at once. Did ever mortal suffer what this man has? And all in the sight of his worst enemy?
Oh, hast thou not tortured him enough? Has he not paid thee all?
No. No, he has but increased the debt.
Then I must reveal your secret. He must discern thee in thy true character. There's no good for him No good for me, no good for thee in this dark maze.
Woman, thou hast great elements. I pity thee for the good that has been wasted in thy nature.
And I thee for the hatred that has transformed a wise and a just man to a fiend. Wilt thou not yet purge it out of thee and be once more a human? I said there could be no good event for others, any of us in this maze of evil. It is not so. There might be good for thee, and thee alone, who has it at thy will to pardon. Wilt thou reject that priceless benefit?
Peace, Hester. Peace. It is not granted me to pardon. I have no such power as thou tellest me of. Let the black flower blossom as it may. Now, go thy ways, and deal as thou wilt with the man.
Be it sin or no, I hate that man.
There goes good Master Dimmesdale to take one of his long walks in the forest,
where he will meditate on some text of Holy Script.
It is surely his spiritual zeal that keeps him alive. For his body is so weak, I marvel he can walk.
I have come many days to this spot, hoping thy walks might bring me here.
Hester, hast thou found peace?
Hast thou?
None. Nothing but despair. Hester, I am most miserable.
The people reverence thee.
Which brings only more misery because of its hypocrisy. Had I one friend, were it were my worst enemy to whom I could daily betake myself, methinks my soul might keep itself alive thereby.
Such a friend thou hast in me. But thou hast long had such an enemy, and dwellest with him under the same roof.
What sayest thou? What mean you?
That old man, Roger Chillingworth, he was my husband.
I might have known it. I did know it. Why did I not understand?
Forgive me.
I forgive you. May God forgive us both. We are not the worst sinners in the world, Hester. That old man's revenge is blacker than our sins. But, Hester, does he know your purpose in revealing his identity to me?
Yes.
And how am I longer to live breathing the same air with a deadly enemy? Be thou strong for me, Hester. Advise me what to do.
Is the world so narrow? Does the universe lie within the compass of yonder town? With the lead yonder forest? Oh, then there's a broad pathway of the sea.
The sea?
Yes. A ship is now in harbor that within 3 days' time will sail to Bristol. Oh, it will be a simple matter indeed to secure passage with all the secrecy necessary.
Oh, Hester, now tell us of running a race to a man whose knees are tottering beneath him. There is no strength. No courage left to me to venture into the wide world alone.
Thou shalt not go alone.
Wherefore have all the people left their work today, Mother? Why have all these people come into the marketplace?
They wait to see the inaugural procession pass. There will be the governor and magistrates and the ministers, and all the great people. There will be music and marching soldiers.
Will the minister be here? And will he hold out both his hands to me and kiss me as he did in the forest yesterday?
He will be here, child, but he will not greet thee today. Now must thou greet him.
Look, Mother, here comes the man who lives on the ship. The man you talked to yesterday afternoon.
Good morrow, Mr. Sprint.
Good morrow, Captain.
I must make the steward get ready one more berth than you bargained for, I learned.
What mean you? Have you another passenger?
Why, know you not that another is minded to try my cabin fare with you? Aye, you must have known it. For he tells me he's of your party, and a close friend of the gentleman you spoke of, and will bring him aboard with him. His name, I believe, is Chillingworth.
Look, here comes the procession.
Aye, there's the governor.
And Master Dimmesdale. His election sermon was the greatest triumph of his life.
Such eloquence. Well, there goes the holy man in the procession now.
Look you. Reverend Dimmesdale leads the procession line and is walking this way.
Procession.
Let me through, please.
He's walking toward the scaffold, which stands Hester Prynne.
Hester, come hither. Come, my little pearl.
Madman, hold! What is your purpose? I can yet save you. Would you bring infamy upon your sacred profession?
Methinks you are too late, tempter. Thy power is not what it once was. With God's help, I shall escape thee now. Come, Hester, come. Support me on yonder scaffold. So, you come with us, Roger Chillingworth.
Hadst thou sought the whole world over, there was no one place where thou couldst have escaped me, save on this very scaffold.
Thanks to him who led me here. Hester, is this not better than what we dreamed of in the street?
I know not. Oh, I know not.
Let me now do the will which he hath made plain before my sight. For Hester, I am a dying man, so let me make haste to take my shame upon me. People of New England, ye that have loved me and deemed me holy, behold me here, the one sinner of the world. At last, I stand upon the spot where 7 years ago I should have stood. Here with this woman whose arm supports me. Oh, the scarlet letter Hester wears. You have shuddered whenever you saw it. I tell you that with all its mysterious horror, it is but a shadow of what I bear on my own breast. Behold! Oh! Behold the dreadful witness to her!
The minister tears the band from his breast!
What a scarlet letter cut out into his flesh!
Oh, thou hast escaped me.
May God forgive thee. Thou too hast deeply sinned. Hester, farewell.
Shall we not meet again? Shall we not spend our immortal lives together?
Hush, Hester. We have sinned. That answer lies with God, who has the power to forgive all. His will be done. Farewell. Farewell.
Arthur?
Mr. Prynne? Yes, she came back to us again.
No, she left the town for a good many years.
When Master Chillingworth died, the year after the minister, he bequeathed a goodly sum to little Pearl.
And Hester returned without Pearl.
And though Hester Prynne refused to take off her scarlet letter, she became a reverenced person in the town.
And before she died, she asked that the only inscription on her tombstone be the letter A.
The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne is another in a series of living fiction presented each week by Northwestern University in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company. Scarlet Letter was adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. The cast and directors were students of Northwestern University. Hester Prynne was played by Faith Kellogg, Arthur Dimmesdale by Richard Swift, and Roger Chillingworth by Tam Spiva. The two gossips were played by Millette Alexander and Norma Leonza. Others in the cast were Jermaine Golda, Fred Posner, David Press, Jim Holston, and Dave Adams. The assistant director was Roger Running. The director was Ginger Funston. The entire production was under the supervision of John Cowan. This is Jim Hamilton speaking. This is the NBC Radio Network.